So it was authority over tradition. Now look at, we're going to just look at the first five verses here initially. Now it happened on the second Sabbath after the first that he went through the grain fields. And his disciples plucked the heads of grain and they ate them, rubbing them in their hands. And some of the Pharisees said to them, "Why are you doing what is not lawful to do on the Sabbath?" But Jesus answered them and said, "Have you not even read this? What David did when he was hungry, he and those who were with him, how he went into the house of God and took and ate the showbread and also gave some to those with him, which is not lawful for any but the priest to eat. And he said to them, and here is a dagger into the heart of the religious, the Son of Man is also Lord of the Sabbath." Now we read that and we don't understand. But if you're a Jew, you understand fully what he's just said there. The Sabbath thing that you guys keep on to hold on to, the thing that you just sort of challenged me on that we were not holding up, the reality of it is, fellas, I'm the creator of the Sabbath. It was my idea. That's what he's saying. I'm the one that came up with the whole concept of rest. Remember, when you think of Sabbath, think of nothing less than rest. That's what it means. That God, the Lord himself, had set up a day for man to stop everything and simply rest. And to relax in who he was in his relationship to his God. That was the purpose of the Sabbath. It was established for the benefit of men. But the religious had turned it from a benefit or a blessing to a burden. As religion always does. It always makes coming to the Lord so burdensome. And it's when I'm out there and ministering to people and training these leaders, whether it was in Belize or anywhere else, it is absolutely staggering how difficult it is to get through to people who throughout their life, their parents' life, their grandparents, their great-grandparents, they've been so absorbed in this religion, and it's so hard to get them to see that all they need to do is turn that loose. Now, all of us sitting in this room know precisely what I'm talking about, don't we? Because all of us at some point either were religious ourselves or have family who was either before or still is deeply involved in religion. And it's heartbreaking. Because you talk to them about the simplicity of a relationship with Jesus Christ. It's simply about you and him. That's it, man. Nothing more, nothing less. But the religious cannot grab a hold of that. It's too easy, they say. The problem is, they're right. That's the funny part about it. God made coming into a relationship with him so easy that a child could do it. How many times have we talked about the children that Jesus just said, "Let them come. This is what the kingdom of heaven is like." It's not like those dudes in the Calvary Chapel that show up on a Sunday morning and don't have anything to do with me the rest of the week. Ooh, yeah. Lift their voices to me on Sunday morning, but then sort of disappear the rest of the time. Yeah, that's all of us, isn't it? That's what he's talking about. That's the whole point. We're no different than they were. "Well, I pray, Lord, but man, I'm so busy today. I just don't have time." You know how many times I've said that to God? And God goes, "Okay. Okay. Oh, Lord, I'd love to read your word, but man, I've got so much reading to do for study. I've got to be prepared, Lord. You've called me to teach. I must be prepared. I just don't have time to just read your word and let it speak to me. I've got to study. I've got to outline. I've got to point it out. I've got to break down the passage. Study the words. I've got to do all of that. I just don't have time to just sit down and just read." And God goes, "Okay." Then I find myself like anemic, stumbling around, can't get straightened out, trying to figure out what has happened. And God goes, "Over here. Over here." And I go, "Oh yeah, it's unbelievable." But to get people to see that other side. Now the reason I'm calling this tradition, have moved on from the religious concept of this, is because God never set the Sabbath to be religious. As I said, he set it to be relief. But these guys, like you and I, had turned this in to something it was never intended to be. To the point where you couldn't do anything on this day for fear of breaking the Sabbath. Let me just share some of the things that you couldn't do. If you were a tailor, you couldn't carry the needle out of your shop with you on the day. Because if you carried the needle, it would remind you of work, and therefore you would be guilty of breaking the law. If you had a toothache, you were allowed to rinse your mouth out with vinegar on a normal day to help with the infection and the pain and so on and so forth. But on the Sabbath, if you had a toothache, you could put this vinegar into your mouth, but you could not spit because that was work. They made the law where they called it a Sabbath day's journey. Anything over 1,000 steps was to break the law. So everywhere you went, it had to be under 1,000 steps. So every you'd walk down the cities of Jerusalem and people were going, 1, 2, 3. Yeah, everybody, this is what it means to live under the law, to live under the traditions of men. You couldn't harvest and you couldn't thresh, that's for sure. This was a day of rest, after all. You'd be guilty of breaking the Sabbath. But they always found ways around things. The Sabbath day's journey, you know what they would do? They would go 1,000 paces, and then they would stop and they would set up a meal for two, and that they would claim that as their residence for that day so that they could continue on the journey. The religious always find a way around. Well, we'll just do these prayers. This will square us away. Well, that's not really working. Let's add those prayers to it too. Okay. Well, no, we've got to, you know, we got to do this and we got to have this. I mean, if we're going to be acceptable to God, you know, we can't break the thing. So let's just set up all of these other things that have to be done so that we know that we're acceptable and receivable to our God. And God just goes, unbelievable, unbelievable. And we set up our things here at Calvary and we say, well, we have to do it this way and we have to do it that way. And the Lord just goes, it's the same thing. So it happens after the second Sabbath. Now right there from the get-go, what's happening here, Luke is, remember, writing to Gentiles. They didn't really get everything, but Luke is giving them a hint here when this happened. We don't have time to get into all this because it's really fascinating. But it happened on the second Sabbath after the first. It's believed that what Luke was talking about to those people that he wrote to a couple thousand years ago, that they would have known about the two Sabbaths during the Feast of Unleavened Bread. You see, when the Feast of Unleavened Bread, regardless of what the day was, that was to be a Sabbath. If it happened on a Wednesday, it was to be a Sabbath. Because in other words, it was to be a rest. So if it happened on a Wednesday, we know that Friday evening started the Sabbath, so you would have another Sabbath immediately after that, even though 6 days had not gone by. So what Luke is giving us an intent here is that while all of this is happening, it appears to be during the time of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, which is interesting because it's talking about grain. What is bread made from? It's grain. Imagine that. So Luke is pointing all of this out. And he says in the second Sabbath, after the first, that would have been the one that, you know, fell on the day of unleavened bread. He went through the grain fields. Now, I love how Luke puts this. He just sort of meandered through the grain fields. Jesus did nothing without a purpose. Because he knew all things. He knew all men. He was not caught off guard by the enemy. The disciples walking alongside him were completely oblivious to the fact that the enemy was in the area. But Jesus certainly wasn't. So now it just happened on the second Sabbath that he went through the grain fields and his disciples plucked the heads of grain and ate them, rubbing them in their hands. Now picture this. If you've ever been around grain, I know some of you had, you pick some off and it's got the chaff on it, right? The stuff you don't want, stuff that makes you cough, gets in your teeth and all that junk, right? That's the stuff we're talking about. And so what they do is they rub these things and then you blow off the stuff, you know, like peanuts. Right? You blow off that light, airy stuff. And that's what they were doing. Now, here's the problem. And some of the Pharisees said to them, now there's an indication of something going on here. He's being watched. They just happened to see him in the grain fields. Imagine that. What a lucky lot they were to just come upon the scene at the right time. These people were amazing. Now they were following him. Why? Because he'd already shown them up. Because he spoke truth and they couldn't deal with it. He brought light and they wanted the darkness. He brought truth and they wanted lies. They wanted power and authority and prestige. But Jesus was taken away from that. I mean, after all, he was growing in popularity while they were declining. Never a good place to be. I mean, man, this guy, he's taking business away from us, man. So they're watching him. And then they see him go into a grain field. You can imagine what's going on in their minds. Let's pay a close attention here. Because remember, fellas, this is the Sabbath. Oh, we better watch him closely. So when some of the Pharisees said to him, and now they've seen, oh, look at what they've just done. Oh, they've picked the grain. This is why Luke draws this in. They've harvested. Get it? First of all, they're walking through the grain fields. They had probably counted the steps. Yeah, they were over. They were overstepped. And they get out there, so they've done all of this, and now they pick the, oh, they're guilty of breaking the law. They have just harvested. But oh, no, no, Luke says, there was another aspect. They rubbed it in their hands. They threshed it. Two aspects of the farmer. Harvesting, threshing. Oh, these guys have broken the law. Why are you doing what is not lawful to do on the Sabbath? What a tragedy, man. What a tragedy. The legalness of the law is so stringent, it's frightening. The liberality of grace is an amazing thing. You know what the question that popped into my mind, and I searched, I read, and I have no answer for you. I don't know what's going on here. These guys with Jesus, they knew what they were doing was breaking the law. They knew. They were Jews, for goodness sake. They would have known, you can't do this. Now, I don't know if it was because Jesus hadn't really, really clearly identified himself as yet. That's what we're moving towards with his, remember, the pyramiding statements. So they understanding he's certainly something abnormal. He's certainly sent of God. Of that, they have no doubt. But to walk through the fields with this guy and to do something that was completely opposed to the law, I'm thinking, what was going on here that they felt the freedom to do that? I don't know. I mean, maybe they had a discussion and they were like, wow, my stomach is growling. In fact, we're told in Mark's gospel that they were hungry, and that's why they did this. They had been on the road, and they were hungry. Apparently, they didn't have food, and so they went in, and we don't know what happened. But maybe Jesus said, well, then let's go get some grain. Well, wait a minute, that's against the law. No, it's not. It's not. Because they didn't know he was the Lord of the Sabbath until this event. They were about to learn, but at this point, they didn't understand. So I don't know what was going on here. That's the kind of stuff that makes the wheels in my brain tick. I'm like, wow, what caused them? If I would have been them that day, what would it have been that was different about this and going out there that I would have thought I could do this? And no doubt they knew that the Pharisees were following them. I mean, there's probably very little doubt about that. Whatever, I don't know. It's just very interesting to me. So these, what are you guys doing, man? This is not lawful. But Jesus answering them said, have you never read this? Okay, come on, Mr. Religious guys. You guys are religious because you say you have you not read the scriptures? How can you forget? And that's what he said. What David did when he was hungry and he and those who were with him, he went into the house of God and he took and he ate the showbread and also gave some to those who were with him, which is not lawful for any but the priest to eat. Now what he's talking about in 1 Samuel chapter 21, David, while he's still young and he's become a commander in Saul's army, but Saul now is afraid of him and recognizes that David is the one to become king. And so Saul begins to persecute him and chase him around. And David is here on the run, him and some of the guys that were going to stand with him. And they were fleeing from Saul for their lives. I mean, they thought that if they got caught, they were toast. And as they went, they came to the place where the tabernacle had been set up. Remember, there was no temple here now that David wanted to build it, but his son Solomon did that. So at this point, it wasn't there. And so they come to the place, to the land called Nob. Yeah, doorknob. But anyway, you get the idea. They come to the land of Nob. And this is where this is at. And the high priest there was called Ahimelech. And he's a good man, but he's caught between the two. He recognizes God's anointing on David, but he also knows that Saul's the king. It's not good to go against the king. Those guys have a way of removing your head from your shoulders should you disagree. And so David comes showing up, but Ahimelech does not know or understand, excuse me, David is on the run, but he recognizes something's happening, and this is a story. And he comes out, and David's there, and David's looking all famished and stuff. And Ahimelech says, "David, what's up with this?" And then David does something that's really interesting. He lies through his stinking teeth. I'm on a mission from Saul. Oh, well, how come there's no one else with you? Well, me and these guys, it's a secret mission. We got to be moving fast. In fact, so fast, I forgot to bring my weapons. Do you have any weapons? Really? We're battling with the Philistines and you left your gun at home? Something's not adding up here. But David is doing this. This always amazes me that God does this. The grace of God. I mean, if it had been you and I, you say, you know what, dude, you lie now. Now dig yourself out of the hole, man. I don't know why God does that, but that's what ends up happening. And David says, well, do you have anything to eat? No, I don't have anything to eat here, he says, except the bread. And remember, in the tabernacle, it was a table that looked very similar to this that sat on the right-hand side, and it was stacked with six flat breads on each side. We would call them a pita, right? Is that what we call flatbread? Okay, yeah, it looks like a big tortilla, but thicker. And there were six for six of the tribes of Israel. Six. And every Sabbath, those things would be changed out. New would be baked and brought in before the presence of the Lord, symbolizing the bread of God, the bread of heaven, and how that relates to the people or the nation of Israel. So when the new cakes were brought in or the new breads were brought in, the old were taken out. But it was the law that only the priest could eat them. So we're talking week old bread here. But remember, that's how they ate it. It's more like a tortilla kind of thing, a chip kind of deal. So he says, no, I don't have anything except this. And David said, well, give that to me. You know, basically, we're hungry. God will understand that our need overrides this. And so Ahimelech does this. Now, lo and behold, he's being watched by a fellow named Doeg. If there's ever a Doeg in your life, keep a close eye on him. That name itself ought to tell you something. But anyway, this is my buddy Doeg. Ooh. So anyway, he goes and finks on this, and Saul ends up killing the priest. But Jesus' point is that David was in need at the point. They knew the story, at least they should have known the story. And the point was that their need was greater than what was intended in the law. And therefore, it superseded the law. Okay? In these instances. And so Jesus is saying to them, don't you understand, Mr. Religious guys? You should have understood. What we're doing here, we're hungry. We're out in the middle of nowhere. We're in this grain thing. We're hungry. These guys got to eat. That's enough. I know that it's not the law, and it's the Sabbath, but you know what? Their need is greater than the law. And then he says to them, and besides that, the Son of Man is also the Lord of the Sabbath. So you know what, fellas? I can kind of change it if I want to, since I wrote the rule book to begin with. Now, they would have recognized that immediately. They would have known that what he was saying. You see, he was Lord of the Sabbath, of the Lord of man's rest, but they were lording the Sabbath on people and using it to be anything but restful. Because that's what religion does. It draws lines in the sand and says, you must adhere. The Lord says, there are no lines in the sand. There aren't. Simply love me as I love you. Follow me. And I will lead you. That's all this is about. The Son of Man is also Lord of the Sabbath. That statement really is a turning point in the ministry. They were not happy with him before because of his popularity. They didn't like the things he was doing. And, you know, they were always trying to, already had been trying to trap him and trip him up and stuff, but they found that it was kind of futile. But when it came to this, everything sort of swings now, and their hatred becomes really, really evident. It's no longer a hidden dislike for who he is and what he's doing. I mean, they're openly doing this. Well, how do we know? Because not only is it, he deal with the, or Luke put in this story of the Sabbath and a harvest and Jesus' authority over those traditions, but now it goes that healing, harvest and healing. Now, this is very interesting. Watch this. Now it happened. I love how Luke does that, because what Luke is doing is now it just so happened that Jesus was in church on this day. I love how he does that. It's like, Luke, really, we know it didn't just happen, Luke. We know that, but Luke's readers may not know that. And so he's saying this, you know, as it happened. Now it happened on another Sabbath. And by the way, this only Luke records that part of it, that it was on another Sabbath. Also, he entered the synagogue and taught. So he went into the synagogue. There was a purpose. He was going to do what he always did. Jesus always went to the synagogue because that's who he was as a Jew. But he went in there not to learn, but to teach. And what he was trying to teach was what they had missed in their synagogue observance. Again, repeatedly we say, the law was only set to show you that, or given to show us that we were lawbreakers. It could never solve the problem. Only pointed out. That's what the law was for. So Jesus would go, and then he was in the synagogue, he would teach. So when he entered the synagogue and he taught, and a man was there whose right hand was withered. Now look at verse 7. So the scribes and the Pharisees watched him closely, whether he would heal on the Sabbath. There it is, healing. That they might find an accusation against him. Didn't work so good in the field. We got to try something else. They know he's coming to synagogue because he always comes to synagogue. Probably the synagogue wherever they were on their journey through the grain fields, this is probably where it was at. But he goes in there. Now notice, look at the setup. A man was there whose right hand was withered. He just happened to be there. Now he was brought there. We don't know this man's name. We know nothing about him except for this account. It'd be really cool to talk to him someday when we get up to heaven. Dude, what was that like? I had no idea what was going on. It'd be like you and I. I did not know God was working in my life. I was completely oblivious to it. But whoever, they brought this guy in, and they've got him in there, and he has a hand that's bad. We're told that it's a, and notice that Luke is the only one, a physician. Mark says a hand. Luke says right hand. Good idea if you're a physician to know which hand you're working on. Seriously, when I was in the military, you guys know this, I worked in surgery, I was an OR tech. I can't tell you how many times we operated on the wrong shoulder or the wrong knee.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, I see you're in recovery and waking up. There's some good news and there's some bad news. Seriously, I'm telling you it happened. This was in the early 80s. So we had to, then us as OR techs, we had to go by and make sure. We used to have a purple, what we call a skin pin. We had to make sure that we wrote an L or an X to mark the spot. Okay, you're sure we're doing that? That's why if you go to the hospitals now, they ask you. Now, it is the left shoulder we're doing or whatever, right? Yes. Okay. By your own words. So we would mark them. And so Luke, as the doctor, recognizes it's the right hand. So this is a setup. And so now the guys are going to watch him, the scribes and the Pharisees. The Pharisees are the priests. The scribes are those that recorded and kept records and so on and so forth. So the scribes and the Pharisees watched him closely, whether he would heal on the Sabbath. The word watched them closely, it doesn't mean that they just sort of watched him. It means they scrutinized what he was doing. They were looking for him to make the slightest mistake, that they might find an accusation against him. Well, we couldn't get him in the field, but we're going to get him on this because we know who he is. He's compassionate. There's no way he's going to let this poor guy in the midst of the synagogue with this problem. He's not going to let that pass. He's going to have to heal him because that's what he does. So we'll catch him when he does. Now, am I the only one that says, wait a second. So these religious guys were worried about what he would do and not the man that had the withered hand? What happened to him? You see, he is a pawn in all this. There's no concern at all for this man. He's nothing more than in a position to use so that they can accomplish their purpose. The guy is completely overlooked. They even knew that Jesus would respond to him. You know, you would think that they had a Pharisaical meeting before church and said, listen, man, can we do something for this guy that keeps coming here, or these people, I should say, that come here and have these problems? Can we kind of pray for him? So, oh, no, we can't do that. That's working on the Sabbath, and we can't have that. So if they hobble into church, well, they can hobble back off. We'll go see him on Monday. So they were waiting to find an accusation, but he knew their thoughts. You know what's interesting? They had set him up with a man with a withered hand and were completely oblivious to the fact that they had withered hearts. Which was worse? The hand or the heart? The heart. Because a withered heart, a heart that is deformed from what it was supposed to be, is a heart that is difficult to change, as we're about to see. But he knew their thoughts. He knew their hearts. You should underline that. That's a frightening verse. He knows our thoughts. Ooh, really? Yep. All of us? Yep. Ooh. Even when we're not in church? Yep. Even when we're not around the elders or the pastor? Yep. When I'm not in the pulpit? Yep. He knew their thoughts. And he said to the withered man, or the man who had the withered hand, arise and stand here. And he arose and stood. Now, this is interesting. He's Jesus. He could have done it by just simply speaking. I mean, after all, he's creator. But what he does is he brings the guy forward and has him stand. Now, if he's like most of you people in here, nobody wants to stand up and get in the middle. So you can imagine this guy was probably not thrilled about this. But Jesus had spoken and he responded. This is the first indication that this was a man of faith. I mean, maybe they said, listen, if he tells you to do something, you do it so we can catch him. Who knows? All we know is that Jesus says, listen, I want you to come and I want you to stand here. And so the man comes and stands. And then Jesus said to them, not the man, to them. So he brings the guy up and then he speaks to them. I will ask you one thing. Is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do evil, to save a life or to destroy life? Which is the best thing to do on a Sabbath? You see what he's just done? He's turned the trap back on them. Because to say to not heal or to not do good is to break the Sabbath. He's just put the ball back in their laps and they're stuck. And when he had looked around in verse 10, the word looked around here is really, really an interesting word, because what it means is he literally went eyeball to eyeball in the room, all the way around the room. He was piercing at them. He was looking at them. He wanted them to know. This is a really interesting thing. So when he had looked around at them all, he said to the man, stretch out your hand. And what was interesting is that when Mark records the same incident, he said he looked around and he was hurt that they would not respond. They were going to stand their ground. So when he looked around at them, he said to the man, stretch out your hand. And he did so. Once again, the healing takes place at the word of Jesus, not before. And he did so, and his hand was restored whole as the other. Wow, you guys. This guy is amazing. How can we not follow this man of compassion? This man who has others in his focus. I mean, this is what we as priests are to be. Mediators between our God and man and our God. That's our role. That's our responsibility. To love, to heal, to pray for, to minister to. No, that isn't what they said. They were filled with rage. Gee, shouldn't somebody have said, wow, the dude's hand is fixed. How cool is that? You would think somebody would have said something. But they don't. They're filled to the top with rage, blindness, senseless, foolish anger, madness. They were infuriated by what he had done. Now put yourself in the man's shoes. And these guys just going, you could just see it in their faces. Oh. You see, they had done just what he said, which is lawful, to do good or evil, to save a life or to destroy it, which is, they wouldn't answer. They rejected, they rebelled. And notice the rest of this. But they were filled with rage and they discussed one with another. Now, there's a meeting. And discussed with one another what they might do to Jesus. They were now having the plan. They got to stop him. They got to destroy him. This can't go on any longer. He's broken the Sabbath. He's guilty. The poor guy is completely left out of this thing. We have no indication whether this man followed, but I would assume he became a follower of the Lord Jesus Christ. Wouldn't you? Religious creates what we watched, or religion, I should say, creates what we watched on that video. All of those places that you saw, I don't know if you recognized some of those areas, Tibet, with their Tibetan Buddhism, probably Bangladesh, India, probably Kathmandu, some of that, with their Theravada Buddhism, India with its Hinduism, places in the Middle East with their Muslimism, all of those places. That's what you saw up there. What has happened? What has gone wrong? Religion. Because all of those religions, and this goes far before any of those, back to the days of Nimrod, that God was put aside so they could worship the way that they wanted. Oh, they've always recognized there's a God. Did you ever notice that throughout the scripture? What did Lucifer do? What was his fall? What did he say? I'm going to raise my throne like the Most High, or above the Most High. There's always a recognition of the Most High. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but doesn't Most High mean Most High? How exactly do you go over Most High? But that's what they did. There was always a recognition throughout all of these things that there is a God, or gods, because we surely recognize that man is not the end. Since he's completely powerless to do anything about his life, to extend it 1 minute, let alone 1 day. So there's got to be something out there. So all of these religions from the very beginning have created their gods, their system of worship. And while they've done so, they've left the true God. And the result is people with withered hands being left out because of those with withered hearts and their religion. The result was on that video. That's why we go into that world and take the gospel. That's why we do that. And we'll never stop doing that. Because those people out there need a Savior. Wasn't it cool to see the same people from those same areas there in those few flashes that we saw that were crying and weeping and praying and singing their songs right in the midst of all of that turmoil? Because the light of the gospel is powerful. The enemy himself, Lucifer himself, the angel of light, cannot abide the light. Because the light we're talking about is true light, true illumination. He can't abide by it. So this whole thing about what we do and who we are and what Jesus did in his sending of us into the world was to bring light into the darkness. How do you want to define darkness? That video. What we watch on our news every day. That's why we do this. Oh, so Christianity is the only answer? Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Well, it's kind of narrow-minded, isn't it? Yes. Absolutely. Boy, kind of a bigot, aren't you? Yes. Absolutely. No problem with that. I wasn't the one that said Jesus when Jesus said, I am the way, not a way. I am the truth, not a truth, and I am the life, not a life. No man comes to the Father. In case you didn't get the thing, no man comes to the Father but by me. Care what religion you create or call it for that matter. One way to heaven, his name is Jesus, and he provided it on that cross and then rose from the dead to say, now the way has been opened. It's open to all. Come unto me, ye who are heavy burdened, and I will give you rest. And I give unto you eternal life, and you shall never perish, and no man can remove you from my hand. To them who believed on him, he gave the power to become the sons of God. I mean, we can go on and on and on. Who would follow something other than that? Who would express their love, not just talk about it? Who would desire us to be a part of his kingdom, as priests, kings and priests, and not want us to bow the knee to him every time we turn out? Allah is not God. Get over it. Deal with it. Oh, if you can't say that. Yes, I can. Yes, I can. I'm sorry. It's not. Never was. First of all, there was no Allah until there was a Muhammad. That ought to tell you something. So anyway, we could go on and on. No, he is the answer. He's the answer for you and I. He's the answer for those who are wounded and withered. And he will always be the answer, which is why we will take the gospel into the world. Luke has challenged us by giving us the story of Jesus. The question is, what will we do with the challenge? We will respond. I will go if called. I don't want to go. Like things the way they are. But I will go if called. Here am I, Lord, send me. We all say that, right? Who said that? Raise your hand. Here am I, Lord, send me. Nope. Yeah, careful now. He might just take you up on that. Here am I, Lord, send me. Go where he asks us to go, because he has the words of life. The world will always be outraged at him, will always look for the means to stop him. How do they stop him? Stopping you and I. Jesus said, you will be my witnesses. Stopping you and I. So there's the challenge to us through a couple of simple passages that I know we've looked at in the past, but there's so much more here. We've got to stop with the religious nonsense. Stop. And stop saying all those other people. No, look in the dang mirror. We are just as religious as the next person. And the sooner we come to terms with that, the better off we're going to be. We just have our own system of religion, our own way that we are sure is truly acceptable to God, because I have come up with a plan. Well, you know, Lord, I'd like to do things your way, but my schedule. So you know what? How about we do this? Don't have time to come to church on Wednesday nights, or to women's fellowship, or to men's study, or to prayer on Sunday nights. Don't have time. So how about this? Yeah. I'm going to leave you with that thought. Let's stand and pray.